This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
The risk of paying too high a price for good quality stocks, while a real one, is not the chief hazard confronting the average buyer of securities. Observation over many years has taught us that the chief losses to investors come from the purchase of low quality securities at times of favourable business conditions. Some listeners will doubtless recognise these words as those of Benjamin Graham, writing his best-known work, The Intelligent Investor, which was published back in 1949. I'm Harry, a content manager at LGIM, and today I'm talking with ETF analyst Eliza Biscopiello. What exactly does quality mean in investment terms? How can portfolios be constructed to gain exposure to quality in a systematic, rules-based way? And what type of investment strategies might incorporate processes designed to boost allocations towards quality stocks? Ellie, thanks for taking the time to talk to me today. Let's start with that first question. When we talk about quality equities or quality companies, what exactly do we mean?
Essentially, quality companies are profitable businesses that are expected to grow steadily and sustainably, those that can weather different market cycles and aren't expected to suddenly go bust, allowing investors to access companies that generate consistent profits and cash flows. In the first half of 2023, Quality Factor has performed well against the backdrop of the global banking scare in March and continued inflationary pressures leading to tighter monetary policy over the period. But quality companies tend to maintain pricing power and profitability and grow with inflation in moments like today. Historically, what made a company or stock high quality could be loosely defined and quite subjective. Systematic approaches to investment have grown in popularity as detailed market data, computing power, and the body of academic research have all expanded. Quality is one of the five well-researched factors, which is a way of grouping assets based on their underlying qualities rather than, say, sectors or geographies. Today, it's possible to tilt portfolios towards quality companies in rules-based investment strategies, which are available for investors as ETFs.
Okay, so thinking about that basic quality definition that you gave of companies that can weather different market cycles and essentially avoid going bust, what springs to mind for me, at least, first is companies that have been around for ages because they've demonstrated, simply by virtue of that fact, that they have staying power. Is that the right assessment?
Quality companies come in many shapes and sizes, but it is possible to make some generalizations. Some might be boring ones, where demand can be expected to remain broadly static, regardless of whether we're in an expansionary or a contractionary phase of the economic cycle. This makes intuitive sense in terms of why quality can drive returns based on the behavior of market participants. Investors will often shun boring, standard companies in favor of hot new ideas. However, there's more to it than just these companies. For instance, many of the biggest technology companies now count among quality stocks based on their financial characteristics. Accounting practices are another thing that can characterize quality companies. They will tend to avoid recording earnings prematurely, which can make them more sustainable.
I wonder if now's a good time to expand on the characteristics that really define quality companies. When you assess companies for quality in a rules-based way, what kind of metrics will determine whether they count as high-quality companies?
There is no one-size-fits-all approach, but profitability and leverage are two metrics that lend themselves to assessing quality in a systematic investment strategy. We can split profitability into three parts to answer the question, is a company eating into its cash or is it still growing its capital while paying out shareholders? We look at return on assets, ROA, and we answer the question, is the company generating profits efficiently in relation to its assets? We also look at change in asset turnover. So is the company improving its asset turnover over time? Is this being done organically or in sudden steps?
I wonder if I can ask whether that varies according to the industry, the asset turnover. Are there particular industries where you might expect the asset turnover to be higher or lower than other ones?
Yes, asset turnover indicates how much revenue a company is generating from its asset base. So there will be asset-heavy industries for which asset turnover is relatively low compared to other industries that generate a lot of sales with less assets, more services. What we look for here is the consistency, the pace of asset turnover. Is it changing quickly or organically over time? And then we look at accruals in the negative, and this is the ability to collect a firm's profitability. So is income truly reflecting the financial position of the firm?
For any new listeners who don't have much background in accounting, can you give us a really simple explanation of what an accrual is?
Accruals are revenues and expenses that are reported when the transaction happens, but not when the payments are received or made. What we want to understand is how much revenue is the firm recording that actually has not yet been collected. And so high accruals indicate lower levels of future profitability. And finally, when we look at leverage, we analyze operating cash flow over total debt, so essentially cash flow coverage, because sometimes it's good to have debt as long as it's manageable and healthy.
That makes sense. I think having covered the what of quality companies, what we mean when we talk about them, we perhaps can now move on to the how. Once you've quantified the profitability and leverage, which you just spoke about, of companies within a particular investment universe, how can you implement, if you like, this information so that you end up with a portfolio of stocks that has a bias towards those with the quality characteristics that you're looking for?
There are two basic ways of implementing this. Screening, where you remove a percentage of the stocks with the lowest scores from the strategy, and tilting, where you underweight stocks with a low quality score while overweighting companies with a higher score. And these two approaches both have pros and cons. Screening is typically best suited for strategies in which you can have large increases in factor loads.
What do factor loads mean?
Here we mean the exposure, so the tilt essentially to a given factor. Right. And yeah, screening can also be used when you can take greater active share. If you have any concerns about outliers or extreme type of companies, or if you want to pursue a very unique investment objective that is quite, it can be quite different from the benchmark. And tilting is best suited for moderate factor exposures if you want to achieve a more efficient use of active share, if you consider factor loads across all stocks within the strategy, or if you want to minimize tracking error and therefore preserve those benchmark characteristics in terms of geographies, for example, or sectors. Within tilting, there are options such as equal weighting or size weighting, market cap weighting. It all depends on the investment objective. And finally, I think you should also consider the impact on different sectors, as for example, banks have a very different balance sheet from other financial companies.
So I wonder if we can now move on from the sort of theoretical background of quality, the quality factor, and have a more practical look at how this can be implemented in portfolios. Can you give me an example of how a particular equity strategy, a particular type of equity strategy, might make use of quality screening or filtering?
One example is equity dividends, which provide investors seeking income with a steady stream of payments. It's also highly relevant for investors seeking capital appreciation, given the sizable proportion of capital appreciation that dividends can account for. Over the past 20 years, reinvested dividends accounted for almost half of global equity's total return. However, simply selecting the highest dividend payers without an assessment of quality could lead to problems. For example, a high dividend yield at present could signify a recent price drop or an anticipated dividend cut by the company. The current dividend yield is not necessarily the best predictor of future dividend growth. Companies may not have the cash flow or return on equity to support their dividend, and management may rely on debt-financed dividends. Now, an expensive proposition, given that we're no longer in an era of near zero interest rates. To put this into context, within the UK universe of equity companies, excluding investment trusts, 66 companies did not have a positive return on equities out of 237 stocks as of the end of May 2023. These are some reasons why a quality overlay can be useful when looking for a sustainable income generation. A quality overlay can help avoid income traps by filtering out stocks that generate high income that is not sustainable, as a company can pay dividends but still it into its cash at the same time without making profits. So there is a need to balance elevated income with income durability and high expectations. Essentially, in the case of dividends, we want to find companies that are growing their capital, are profitable, can also sustain their dividends, and have a long track record of doing so.
I think those points that a high yield could simply be the result of a recent fall in the share price, or that dividends could be financed through capital or debt rather than meaningful profits are easy to grasp. So thank you, that's a really useful explanation. I wonder if you can give us another example of how quality can be incorporated into a different investment strategy.
The very narrow leadership of widely followed US equity indices is one reason why small caps are attracting increasing attention. Only a handful of stocks drove returns year to date in the S&P. Small caps, therefore, can offer potential for diversification and true exposure to the United States as a geography. By some metrics, US small cap valuations are also significantly lower than large cap valuations, which may draw investors to the space. But it's important to recognize that these somewhat abstract qualities are simply ways of encapsulating the underlying complexity of real companies operating in the real economy. Today, companies face a challenging set of circumstances. High inflation is driving up input costs, which, even though can be partly passed on to consumers, are likely to result in lower margins. Higher interest rates, meanwhile, make the burden of servicing debts more difficult to shoulder. And in such environment, we believe adding a quality overlay that considers metrics such as return on assets and leverage to US small cap exposure without affecting the original sector allocation could add resiliency to a portfolio. Such overlay can be helpful to increase exposure to companies that are potentially better placed to weather these difficulties and reduce exposure to those with poorer quality characteristics.
That's another great example, Ellie. I think that really helps to put these quite technical theoretical ideas into a practical investment context that I think listeners will easily be able to understand. So as a closing question, we've described how systematic approaches to quality have evolved over the years from the early days when it was a really quite a subjective assessment that was made to today, where we have a huge amount of data and computing power available to help us structure this factor and how we implement it in portfolios. I wonder if now we can think about how the approach to quality and putting it into practice in portfolios might develop in the years ahead, whether there are new ideas or new technologies that might shape our thinking.
One way could be blending sustainability in an ESG type of way within the approach and quantifying ESG across a broad range of asset classes. This is central, especially in Europe, but it is a topic that is gathering pace everywhere. An increasing number of investors are conscious of the environmental impact of their strategies and how companies can be considered sustainable beyond the profitability income level that we have touched upon today. And then another way could be incorporating forward-looking considerations as well as historical data. How about AI?
Yeah, that makes sense. Ellie, there's obviously been a huge amount of discussion across the investment press and the mainstream press too about AI and how we'll be able to leverage this technology in the years ahead. How do you think that might shape our approach to quality, the quality factor? What are the sort of areas that you think it could give us new insights?
There is a great amount of data out there today, and AI could help identify, for example, the most recent data or the most reliable sources to help strategies be more reactive. For example, companies on projections must be taken with a pinch of salt. Or with AI, you could implement a fully rules-based, not discretionary, type of predictive approach to help a strategy keep ahead of the game, maybe. We are certainly keeping an eye out on the incredible developments in the AI world, as it is a key interest of ours, given our focus on themes.
Well, we'll look out for developments in that space in the years ahead. I'm sure this won't be the last time we touch on it on the LGM podcast. Thanks so much, Ali, for taking the time to talk to us today, and hope to speak to you again soon about a different topic. And thanks to all of our listeners as well.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2023. Legal & General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, the license corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.